accession number 27096, Reel 5.
Cliff Hall, Reel 5. So you had your finger treated at the Berlin Military Hospital and you came back to the camp. I mean, 60 years on, how much movement have you got in your finger now?
Well, that finger's dead, that one there.
Right.
And that one is a bit. Mm. But, I mean, after I'd come back, even when I went out to work in Germany there, this arm used to be blue because there was no circulation and that, like, you know.
Yeah. And, but, of course, you've got back injuries as well, where you were beaten.
Well, that's right, yeah.
So, do you get a pension for these things now?
Yes.
Mm. Do you think that's fair, what you get?
Yeah, well, I mean, I got a 70% pension, and quite honestly, with my estate pension, which gives me about £240, and I'm quite happy. I got security with that. I mean, I don't have to worry. No money problems, because I mean, I keep getting these keep sending me these things about, you know, £5, so pick it up, it's yours, you know, the advert. Mm. Well, I don't want any more money, quite honestly. I mean, I'm not a grabber. As long as I've got enough to live on, that's all I want, like, you know, and I'm quite happy with it, and I'm very pleased about that.
Yeah. And in your diary here, you've got December 15th, 41, leaves. Was that when you left the hospital, was it? Oh, I see, yes. It's when you left the hospital.
Oh, you left the hospital. That's right, yeah.
To start work again. Yeah. You started work again in January. How did you cope when you... I mean, you were saying you've got bad circulation in your arm. Were you well enough to...
Well, I mean, when we went out first, see, all this pick and shovel work, well, I was... nobody could work because the grain was so hard that, and luckily about that, so it gave me a period when it gave me more chance to recover or get my hand better. But I mean, when we moved to another camp, well, then we were in Staggen camp, weren't we?
Oh yes, in April.
Yeah.
We moved from Rudo to Staggen.
Yeah.
Or Staken.
Yeah.
What was that camp like? Was it different?
Well, that was a much better camp. You know, but the rooms were much bigger. The huts were much bigger. There's corridors run right down through the middle with the rooms on the side. Like, you know, there was even a shower. You could go and have a shower at times. Like, you know, when there was any hot water. And that was the first time that we started to think about, you know, escape. Because we were getting strong enough to be able to think that, you know, we could cope with it, and we had an escape committee there. You know, we had a padre, we had a major, the medical corps there, and somebody else. There was only two or three sergeants in the camps, because they only come there that, you know, the camps, they try to run the camps still out under them, sort of the military system, like, you know, and that. And there was one sergeant allocated to each hut, you know, see. But this, we had one there, a sergeant, I don't want to do a black watch of the Argos, but he was in charge when the Red Cross parcels started to come through. He was in charge of them, you know, issued them. Well, he always had a German there to supervise when he was adding a mate, that sort of thing. But if you decided that you wanted, we tried once, there were two Irishmen decided they would try to break out the camp. So for some reason, I mean, it's amazing what chaps can do. They, when they, we used to have to watch all the guards and get into the, find their rhythm of where they used to, how they used to march, where they used to get up in a corner, have a drag or a cigarette, you know, all this sort of thing, to work that out. And we got all that worked out, and then the night was set for the breakout. And they brought out these big wire cutters, eh? They got them into camp, I don't know. it was a mystery. But when the morning, when we looked out there, and they could have got a tank through this all, what they cut. Yeah.
And they got away, didn't they?
Well, yes, I think they did. I never heard anything more about them. But that was the last time we ever attempted, because, I mean, it was impossible, like, with your working all day, that you weren't fit enough to go mess around, you know, digging tunnels or anything like that. So all our breaks had to be done when we're out at work, you know, and you get, you know, chaps to cover up, you know, you try to, you know, put a dummy or something in between, you know, make up numbers, like, or over the night time, you know, you get to make his bed up so he looks as though he's asleep in the bed. All those things.
So did you see anyone escape from a working party?
Well, my mate did.
Oh, who's your mate?
Well, this chap I told you that my sister wrote to.
Oh, yes, yeah.
He
what was his name?
He was Lusted. Charlie Lusted.
Lusted?
Lusted. Yeah, Lusted. His address is in that book, actually.
Yeah.
And, well, he was on a different working party. Like, so when the party came, I come in an early party, and when they other parties coming in, where there was this rumor going around, there was one chap missing. So of course, I didn't even think it would be Charlie, but Charlie had gone, and of course he's out for. As soon as I knew he was missing, I collected his personal stuff up and hung on to that. You see, so that it wouldn't fall into the German hands, and then of course. He was out for 2 or 3 days before he was caught and brought in. And, of course, you put the cooler, like, you know, and they would do your punishment. And I surrendered his, you know, his personal stuff to him, right? I mean, I never saw him, but I would give it to the guard to give it to him. And he was moved. He was moved, like, you know, he went to... Well, he finished up in Poland. That's where he went. And
did you ever consider...
Well, I was going to go with him. But in the end, there were so many, it was so hopeless, because you had to have proper papers, you know, working permits that had to go into it, because, I mean, you work from, as you went from one area, see, the permits were all only sort of used for certain areas. Once you got outside that area, you got to have a different part, you know, a different permit, you see. That was the only trouble. That's why you had to travel of a night time, and, you know, you had to sort of be independent, like, and see what the Prisoner of War Committee I was telling you about, when you went and told them that you're, you know, thinking about going, the chap that was in charge of the Red Cross, what do you do? He give you chocolate. If he can give you chocolate, because that's something light to carry, and you can sort of ration yourself out to it, keep yourself going, until you can probably lift off... live off the land. But I tried it once and I got caught.
Tell me how you planned it.
I think I was in that scam. See, you used to have these, the Frenchmen used to run the black market in Germany, the Frenchmen. So if you wanted to get anything, I mean, you had to flog something to him, you know, like yourself, to get it. And I got treated up with a coat and trousers, but I mean, at the same time there was double agents. They worked for the Germans as well, so they told the Germans where you were going, and I got nabbed as soon as I got to the camp.
Really?
See, that's the now.
You just walked out of the gate, did you?
No, I went from when I was out in a working party. And that.
What did you do? Put on these other clothes?
Well, yeah, I didn't. I was wearing some of it, but like, didn't have any coats and all that. But I went off. But it wasn't very nice.
Had you planned where you were going?
No, I mean, you had to find your way. I mean, we had no idea where we were, actually. I mean, these camps, I didn't know. Right to when they, in the ward, when I used to get the war series had come through, when they were on about the, they had a plan of Berlin, you know, and all these camps like Rudow and Stacken and Telford, Crossbear and all those camps I was in Berlin, I didn't know whether they were named after their districts or what they were. And it was only when... the Berlin Wall come down, that's what it was, and they said they'd broken through the Berlin Wall by the at Stacken on it, or no, Telford, that's right, Telford. And I thought right away, well, Telford is probably the name of the area, like, you see. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known where we were, like, you know. I mean, these officers at, in the Great Escape called it. So, I mean, they had all kinds of stuff, you know that was they could pull apart and all sort of thing, and they had maps and made their own compasses and God knows what.
So,
like,
how did you get caught? What happened? Where were you? Were you walking along?
Yes, I think yes, that's right. Yes, I was, and these civilians come along there, like, you know, and once you try to get. When they start talking to you, like, I mean, you, for all the, I could understand Germans, because, I mean, you can pick out the words and then put your sentences together, but we never got to that stage. Those chaps who was in non-working camps, they used to have German lessons, like, this sort of thing, you know, but not with us.
Yeah.
No.
So the civilians handed you over to...
Oh, well, they're the police. Then they handed us over to the... military, like.
Yeah. And what was their attitude to you, the military, when they...
Well, they weren't at all bad, like, you know. No. Oh, it's,
And did you go back to the same camp?
Yeah, I did go back there, yes. I did go, I went back there I had been punishment, I had a sort of, solitary confinement in a cell, like, you know. And that for a fortnight.
Mm. Was that a bad punishment? Or?
Well, you just lived on a bread and water. That's right. That's all you had.
Very boring, I should think.
Yeah, I mean, you had your blankets. You had all your stuff was taken out. And you were just in a bare cell with, you know, just a bare sort of board more or less to lay on for your sleep. And then you had your exercise, you know, it's a couple of hours exercise at the yard, and then you weren't allowed to speak to anybody if you saw, you know, aircraft over the wire and that sort of thing. But no, it's an experience.
Yeah. And then you got moved to Telton.
Telford, is it Telford?
T-E-L-T-O-W, Telto, yeah.
Telto, that's right, Telto.
What sort of a camp? Was that very similar?
Well, yes, it's quite a good. It was even a much modern camp, like, you know. That's where we got bombed out there. And you go further on there.
Yeah, so you've got bombed by the RAF.
Yeah. Well, see,
Tell me about that. What it was like. What you remember hearing at the time of the RAF and what happened.
Well, we started having these night raids by the RAF, like, you know. Well. We were in these huts. Well, what we used to do when there was any bombing, we used to open the windows, because otherwise we used to be locked in. But we used to open the windows to, you know, for the flying glass light. And this particular night, I mean, we didn't hear the bomb come down, but it was just outside the wire, and all our huts collapsed, It was only that we had these treble tier bunker site, you see, and we saw it all on the ground. If anybody had been, up on their top bunk, they would have had the roof down on top of them, like, you know. But there was only three, really. There was one got killed, and two got very seriously wounded, like, you know. But it was so bad, I mean, that they moved us out and took us up to the... That was across that the other one we were on now.
Cross Bearing,
yeah. Mm. And we were up there until the camp was repaired, and then we went back here again.
Right. So, did you mind moving camps, or was that actually quite a good thing to do?
Well, I mean, it's a laugh, really, because, I mean, when you move camp, see, you've had your personal parcels. You get a personal parcel from home every 3 months, you see. Well, you had your store of a little bit of extra underwear. You had all your other personal stuff you've got, and you had nothing to carry in. The only thing you had a way of transporting from one camp to another, you used to save the Red Cross parcels, the boxes, and keep, you know, put them in them. And then you used to tie the string around and just loop them over your, you know, around your neck, like to carry them. That's the only way you did. So, I mean, there's no pleasure. You didn't have a suitcase. They wouldn't give you a suitcase or a kit bag, nothing like that.
So, which was the worst camp? Is there any way of sort of saying which was the worst and which was the best?
Well, in Starkin, I don't think I've got it in there. We were lined up. See, with these escapes, when those two chaps escaped from the camp, the Germans had twigged, you know, that they sort of realised that the sergeant in looking after the Red Cross parcels was something, you know, to do it, like he was connected with it. So they moved him. He had gone when we got back to the camp, and we sent our spokesman down to the main gate and wanted to know why Sergeant so and so was at the gong. Oh, they said he moved on his own accord, sort of thing. Like, you know, he wasn't sort of no sort of pushing him or you know just taking him and go. So we weren't satisfied with that. So we decided, we all got together and we decided that in the morning when we went down to the main gate and they shouted out for the Arbeit commanders as a work parties, we would refuse to go out. So, right, we went down as usual and that, and of course they shouted out for number one working party, and nobody moved, coming in second, and it went on right through. And, of course, the guards started to panic and God knows what, so they had to get the old commandant out of bed, like, and he come out with his breeches, you know, the trousers, he didn't have any gaiters on, or his boots. And he was an old boy. He had his teeth come out like it. And he was an old retired officer. And he was up in the air. And he said, "Right, get back in your brave barrack room," sort of thing. And I thought, "Well, we've won the day," like, you know. And about 2 hours later, somebody, you know, shouted, "Cool, look up there," you know, because we were right by the railway line. That's where the chaps broke out from that section. And there was this company of German soldiers marching, and they were coming past by the entrance, and we thought, oh, they're eight, you know, Germans like you are, you're eight on a stunt sort of thing. Anyway, they left turn and marched right into the camp. And they went on to the, like you say, all the huts was right in the square and in the green in the middle. And they come out, and you marched out. I said, "All out on parade, everybody," and you get out. And right down that one side, that we all had to line up. The next minute, they got out and they mounted two machine guns. And the commandant came out, dressed up then by then. He said, "Right." He told the guards to put a burst of machine gun fire up above our heads, like. And he said, "Right, I'll give you 5 minutes to make up your mind whether you're going to work or not. Otherwise, I'll tell him to lower the sights." And he would have done it. I mean, I've got a chap, Billy Buck, up in Newcastle. Every time he comes, he rings me up, like, he always talks about that. If you know what really had happened, but that's the kind of things that did happen, like, you know.
Were you frightened when he said that?
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, I don't know, really. I mean, it's, they're a gang of you think all these things are bluff until it happens, like. But we went back to Bar. I mean, we certainly went. We changed our mind and went back to work, and then we had to make up for all the hours we'd missed, like, you know. But that was about only a scary part of that, you know, at the time. And then we moved on to Telford.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we moved out to there.
To Starlag 3, is that right? No, Bullhide.
Yeah. Well, that one there was the what we call the propaganda camp, because they moved They moved about three camps into one.
This is Bullhide, is it?
That's right, yes, that last camp. Mm-hmm. And there were so many chaps there that they never had enough work for everybody, so they used to work shift work. So that meant half the camp went out on a Monday, and you were in the half the camp stayed behind, which you sort of do a bit of sport or anything like that. I mean, we had concert parties going and, you know, all these sort of things that we... I mean, you had to find your own entertainment, like, you know, make it.
But that sounds as though life improved a bit there.
Oh, it did improve, like. Mm. But then in the camp, there was a park on one side of the... which you could see all the people come out there, you know, sunbathing on a Sunday there in the park, like, you know, and a bit of a stream. And it was quite good there. And there, you know, if there was any escapes from there, I mean, we had an RAF officer there, a German RAF officer, and he shake hands with you. When you got caught, brought in, he shake hands with you and congratulated you, got so far, like, you know.
How many times did you escape?
Only once, I know, yeah.
Did you not think about trying again? Or?
Well, we didn't see the point, really, because, I mean, you look at the whole of Europe, I mean, it was so fast. Mm. I mean, the only thing that we had planned if we were going, we were going to go up to Gothenburg or something like that. That's up on the Baltic coast. Like, we were hoping to get up to there, and then perhaps get a Swedish ship and get to Sweden. Yeah. That was the only way up to go up through that way. Yeah. But that was in Selex, right down in Austria and places like that. Mm. That's where a lot of them had a better chance of getting out. Like, you know. Mm.
And then, so they moved you around quite a bit, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean that's.
Your list here. Did you mind being moved? Did you all go together?
Well, in that case, it's only when we did move eventually out and went to 4B at Melbourne that they classed us as mutineers there when we got there.
Yeah.
That
classed you as
mutineers.
Oh really? What had you done to?
Well, see when Berlin was getting bombed quite a lot then, and by all accounts that, you know, our camp should be in danger areas. So the Swedish Red Cross got us moved out. And the Germans, when the Italy packed in, and the plot was for the Germans, they said they were going to take us down to the Brenner Pass. And we were going to, where the Italians had been working on the new tunnel down there, they were going to put the British prisoners of war working down there. So they put us in trucks. That's where we were supposed to be going. But we were 2 days in trucks where, you know, we would be put up at night time because they used to use the railway for moving all their own transport of grain. But we used to be working, we used to be in the trucks and moving during the daytime. So if there's any planes come over and strafe the lines, well, we would have been the ones to have caught it. But we were out for 2 days, and then the second night, we got out in the morning. They used to let us out to stretch our legs, but when we were going to go in and get back in the trucks again, they said, no, just pick your gear, your march, and you're going to go. And we marched right down the road, and we come to this big prisoner of war camp, which was Moorburg, that's 4B. And there, of course, I mean, when they got there, they thought that we were a new batch of prisoners coming in, and they started us, you know, telling us, you know, doing what they shouldn't have been doing to us, and we stood our grounds, and that sort of thing. And through that, they were so, well, they sent for special troops to come in, because they were going to move us out. And they took us there, the commandant came in and said, look, you in 2 hours' time, you've got to move. And I said, well, you can do it. You would move now if you like. We don't want to stay here any longer, see? So anyway, they took us, and we had a forced march. We had to go from about here up to Totsham And we were a forced march. I mean, you're running most of the time, and then you stop with all your, you know, carrying all your gear. And we got the guards at Fixed Bayonet, and if you didn't get out, they were just sort of playing around with you every time you stopped. They said, "Oh, yeah, we'll have a break for a while," like, you know. No, sorry, you know, stopped, and they if you didn't move, you know, they'd say, "Right, now that's enough, get cracking," and they come in with their bayonets, and we had 30 blokes with, they're not very severe wounds, but a lot of those chaps got bayoneted because they weren't quick enough. Mm. And
how deep did they bayonet them?
Well, you were in the clothes, like, I mean, it was just propping, you know, with the bayonets to get you moving, like, but they were piercing your skin, like.
Did that make you very angry?
Well, yes, I mean, it was, but I mean, it's something, you know, what can we do about it? It was the only thing. I mean, some chaps were just dropping dropping their gear because they couldn't go any further with all, their personal stuff in there. And the funny part about it, there were civilians, you know, coming out of doors and dragging the stuff and taking in doors. I mean, that's the type of the situation was there. And when we got to this camp, we went to a concentration camp. That's where it took us.
Which one was that?
Jacobsdal.
Jacobsdal, right.
It's on that.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So that was a concentration camp,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Who else was there?
Pat?
Who else was there?
Well, they were Jews and political prisoners and all that sort of thing. Mm.
So were you mixed up with...
No, we weren't mixed up at all. First thing, when we got there, we had to take everything what we had on us. We had to take it all out of this and that. And we were searched and everything had to be checked and that. And that. And then they took us into this compound. And where we had bunks, there all there was in there was these big shelves, you know, what you see in those camps. And we stayed there. We were more or less told to go out there. We were out there for a fortnight, but I mean, about 10 days after that, the message came up. The commandant down at the static we come from, he sent a letter of apology up to. We had a big RSM, he was an Australian, and he said, he took this note. And he said, "Right, you take this back to your commandant." And he said, "You can tell him to stick it up his ass." Like, see,
really?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite rude. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, sorry. No. Yeah. So
and
this RSM, was he a sort of spokesman?
He was in charge of now most of the boys there. Like, you know, he was in charge of the boys. He was the senior NCO. That's what it was. But he made us stay there for the rest of the year. We were there, I think it was nearly a fortnight. And then when they did come, they set up trucks to carry all our stuff back. So that was that. We'd done a bit of good. But when we got captured, see, one of the things they wanted us to do, they wanted to delouse us when we got to Moorburg. Well, we knew what you had to go through to get demobbed. Because, I mean, you stripped all everything off your clothes and you put it in a bundle. And it was all, it went into a steamer. And when it came out, they put that on a steamer and then you go into these, I mean, I can imagine now that all these people went into these gas chambers where they were all these sprinklers. I mean, it was the same sort of thing. You went in there, but we did have sprinklers. But then sitting as you come out, nobody had any clothes on. And then there were a little, I don't know what kind of, what nationality was, a little young girl with a bucket. With a distemper brush, and they were, as they were coming in, they were putting, you know, doing all this, rained all your privates with this disinfectant. When you come out, you had to stand around outside for, you know, quite a long time before. Well, when the stuff came out the steamers, they were so hot you had to just leave them until they cooled off. But they stunk and stunk and stunk for days afterwards. If you had a leather belt or anything going in there, it just sort of just broke up. They were completely finished.
So were you ever deloused?
Oh, hundreds of times.
Right, okay. Clip 4, end of reel 5.